doing very well. I was very happy to see some football in a stadium happening in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Scoreboards were great last week. Now we've added football to the mix, and next week we get to add a preseason game, and before we know it, there'll be actual real games that matter.
Are you one of those guys that during the off season you just mope around and you think, I can't live without football on my TV screen?
Truth be told, I am not operating at a football deficiency in my life, considering I'm calling the Bulls games on Friday night, JU on Saturday, covering the Jaguars on Sunday throughout the football season. So honestly, there's a part of me that kind of says, hey, if football season wants to wait a little longer to get here, I'm okay with it. I know most fans would say that's outrageous. Why would you ever have that feeling? But, you know, my life goes from a 5 or 6 day a week work week to a 7 day a week work week. So, you know, there's a reason why I don't have to have it in the off season.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're an equal opportunity sports aficionado.
Well, and you find your, you know, the sport that does it for you. And
what is the sport that does it for you, by the way?
Oh, that's kind of a,
what is your favorite?
You know, growing up and having gone to the University of
Kansas. Figure skating, right?
Of course. Two-man luge. No, having gone to the University of Kansas, college basketball at a very high level has always been something. But I will tell you that I got into broadcasting, not to get too deep down this path, but I got into broadcasting because when I was 6 years old, I decided I was going to be a baseball announcer. And so I have had a chance to call a lot of play-by-play for the Suns and for JU through the years, and so covered the Royals in Kansas City. So, you know, baseball doesn't have the same passionate following as football does here in Jacksonville and through most of the Southeast. But, baseball, college basketball probably were my first two early loves.
What is it about baseball announcing that to you is so magical?
Well, you know, one thing about a baseball announcer, you know, if you're calling a football season, you might get 12 or 14. If you're a college football announcer, you might get 16, 17, 18, 19 games a year. If you're a pro football announcer, baseball's 162 game season. So the announcers got to develop their craft so much over a long period of time. And you think about Vin Scully, who's coming back for, I think, his 59th season, calling games for the Dodgers. Think about the number of games, the number of innings, the time you've been able to mold and shape your craft and the connection that you have. If you grew up in a baseball town and you hear that same voice or those same voices day after day, it's sort of the background noise of the summertime. And growing up in Kansas City, listening to Denny Matthews, who's a Hall of Fame announcer, he had called the Royals game since their first year in 1969, and you hear that and you think, boy, that's just a part of it. And as soon as they started throwing curveballs and I realized I couldn't hit them and I wasn't going to be wearing the uniform, I figured that was the next best thing to be a part of that. And so that's, you know, that sort of attracted me to baseball announcing.
Yeah, it is a really special space that they occupy. But as you said, we don't have a lot of baseball in this area, although, of course, we have the wonderful Suns. Let's talk about the Jaguars for a minute. The scrimmage outside of Everbank Field Saturday night. No tackling.
Right.
Very controlled environment.
Yep. Gus Bradley called it a thud practice.
A thud practice?
Meaning you'd thud it. The defense would thud into the offensive player, but you weren't going to take anybody down. No sacking of the quarterback. Well, that's one thing, by the way, that I'm really interested to see how Blake Bortles does in the preseason, is handle the pressure of having people in his face. I thought that, by and large, Bortles looked better than he had in the training camp practices, although he certainly is showing improvement there as well. Chad Henne looked comfortable until the end. He had a couple of batted balls knocked down, which has been a problem for him traditionally. Bortles certainly is showing reason for optimism, and overall, I think the Jaguars head coach, Gus Bradley, liked what he saw.
It was really good. You know, a lot of situational. We need more of it. We need more of it. And we'll schedule some more situations like that. But I thought it came back. Chad looked real efficient. Defense came back. Some difficult situations. A couple of those, you felt the rush. You know, just sitting back there, I felt the rush. Those are good signs. We had some missed opportunities, though.
And one of Bortles' best plays came on a pass to Mike Brown, kind of through a back shoulder play on a third down. It was whistled down at the spot, but if it had been in a regular game, it probably would have been a fairly spectacular touchdown.
If it wasn't scrimmage rules, that's a touchdown to Mike Brown on the back.
I thought
shoulder,
so too.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would have got my head taken off, but I mean, those things are gonna work on. Like, you know, I didn't get the protection right, so you know, try to get rid of it as quick as possible. And Mike made a great play, coming back to the ball on the back shoulder throw, and I think he scored.
It was a good chance to see the players get in the stadium under the lights in a little more intensity than they are in most practices, at least for a time. Defense looked better than the offense, Melissa, which is not unusual at this point of the season and in training camp, and certainly was not unusual considering the number of weapons who were not on the field for the offense. No Cecil Shorts, no Ace Sanders, no Allen Robinson, the rookie wide receiver, no Toby Gerhardt, who's going to be the starting running back. A little bit thin as far as that's concerned. Nonetheless, it's the next step for the Jaguars. Chad Henne will continue to be the starter. And it brings up this thought, though, as we saw, it was almost as if we saw a closing of the gap a little bit between Henne and Bortles with this. And Dave Caldwell, the general manager, Gus Bradley, the head coach, has been saying they are not going to rush Bortles in there. They want him to develop, and they're considering giving him all year long to develop without putting him in there.
How unusual is that to give someone that much space to grow and develop?
Once upon a time, it was not unusual at all. Now, it's pretty rare, particularly for a top three pick. You know, you talk about a guy who was the third pick in the draft. Now, he did come from a system that wasn't exactly a pro-style system. Sometimes you get a guy who goes right in there and does very well. Andrew Luck started right away. He may be one of those once-in-a-generation kind of quarterbacks. But most of the quarterbacks who get in there are going to have their struggles. And the thing that I think Gus Bradley wants out of Bortles is they want to understand that he knows the offense, number one. And number two, that he's not going to be hesitant back there and get so, you know, and put himself in danger of injury. If you remember back, the plan when the Jaguars drafted Blaine Gabbert was to sit him. David Garrard was the quarterback. Then they had some extenuating circumstances. Garrard hurt his back, and they wound up cutting him. And they start Luke McCown at the beginning of the year, and McCown didn't look very good. And Jack Del Rio, who was certainly on a much shorter leash as a head coach than Gus Bradley is, felt forced to put Gabbert in there. He got hammered right away, got pounded by the likes of the Jets and the Ravens and other teams, and he never recovered. Now, whether that's the reason why he never recovered or otherwise is, you know, we can debate that. But you can certainly put a quarterback in there too soon if he's not ready to handle it. And so that's why I really want to see how Bortles handles the pressure, handles the pass rush coming at him in these preseason games.
Definitely. So next for the Jaguars, the preseason opener Friday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, when you were here last week, you talked about the fact that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have that big pirate ship.
Uh-huh.
And now the Jaguars kind of have something that they can point to as their MacGuffin.
Yeah,
you
right,
know, they're
right.
Like, now we've got these video boards.
And the pools.
And the pools.
Believe me, you will see a lot of shots of those video boards, but you might see more shots of the pools on TV for the national broadcast.
I think people are talking more. I mean, even though the video boards are the thing they're so excited about, you know. Nationally, I think people are. They're when they think of Everbank Field now, they're going to think of those swimming pools.
Yeah, and there was a Bold City Brigade pool party there over the weekend, and one of the things that I saw was that Jackson DeVille had stripped down to, well, the inner fur head on, jumped into the pools, and that, you know, that video goes viral. So there's a lot of opportunities for that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that's the home opener, or excuse me, the preseason opener, Friday night, Tampa and Jacksonville. Meanwhile, you've been following the Armada. They're continuing to build towards their first roster.
Yeah, over the weekend, the team held tryouts with around 70 players, some of whom were invited. Others earned their way in via the open tryouts last week. It's the second in a number of steps that the team is taking before they sign their initial roster. General Manager Dario Sala tells me they will have a strong local flavor to at least part of the roster.
The talent has been higher than what we were expecting. We're pretty happy. I just had a meeting with the head coach, with Jose. We talked a little bit of what it's going to look, our demographic and roster for the elite performance practices. Pretty excited. And I think we're going to have 30 players that we're going to be able to count on them and be able to put together at least 10 to 7 contracts in December.
So in other words, some of those 30 players who they will add to their elite performance squad, which is basically an off-season roster, will have a chance to make that final roster next spring, and they're saying that, you know, they're going to be around 7, maybe more, players with local ties who are going to be on the roster.
Very nice. Congrats to the Axemen. Cole says they've won the Southern Conference Championship in rugby.
Yeah, they'll host a national championship August 23rd at UNF, which will be a big opportunity for them to win the national championship. And one final note, there's a special thing going on Sunday at the baseball grounds. Cheerleaders from the Suns, Axemen, and Jaguars are joining forces, and instead of cheering for different teams, they'll be cheering for the same cause. A group called Girl Power to Cure, a locally founded charity that raises funds to find a cure for Rett syndrome, is holding what they're calling the Power the Flower Day at Bregan Field during the Suns game Sunday. Great example of how involved those local sports teams are in the community, and a great cause, too. And we'll put a link to the website to check out more about that up after the show.
Very nice. And follow Cole on Twitter as well, at Cole Pepper. Check out White Pepper Sports Marketing. Always good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.